Hi, I'm Josh, and
Oculus, you hardly know us.
I'm Matt, and I forgot what I was going to do for a joke here.
Oh.
TJ who? Wait, TJ who?
Who the fuck is TJ?
Who the fuck is TJ? This is Charlie, and I'm an acid nozzle, I guess? I'm not sure.
And this is probably Horror Show Hot Dog. So what we ended up with is, to begin with, Truth or Die, or Verdad o Morirse.
Well, sure.
Well, it's not like a real sentence, so...
Not muerto?
No, because that'll be truth or dead.
Yeah. But you'd say...
You tell me the truth or you die!
I find myself having to correct Spanish quite often on this show, and I don't mean correcting your Spanish, but correcting the Spanish language into being cooler. So,
you should be a Spanish teacher. Like, this is the way lame-ass Spanish-speaking people would say this shit, but come on.
Up your game, Spanish.
It's like, teacher, how do you say refrigerator? Muerte.
Muerte.
Well, I just figured that would be your answer to everything.
True.
Because in Spanish, refrigerator is refrigerador.
Oh.
A fridger.
Spanish is half-assing it again.
A frigider, yeah. It seems like they stole a lot of words from us, is what I'm saying. Truth or Die, we begin in a dipshit hat party in Britain. Apparently that's a thing that people do in Britain, is they just wear dumbass hats to a party. It's not a costume party, really.
No.
Just everybody's in a dumb hat.
Yeah.
And they start playing Truth or Dare, where you spin a bottle. Point of order.
Yeah.
Do you ever spin a bottle for Truth or Dare?
I can probably count on one hand the number of times I've played Spin the Bottle or Truth or Dare.
Oh, that's very sad.
Most
you were busy fucking bitches while I was like, maybe she'll, like, take her top off.
That could be. but no, I mean, like, I think more of the times I've played Truth or Dare, it's been on stage as part of a show.
Mm.
Where we just try to humiliate each other because we already know how you can fuck someone over. Or same thing like Never Have I Ever. Like,
yeah.
You know, we do that. But, yeah, I don't know. Those aren't games I have a lot of experience with, but I was still like... Shitty party games or doing it wrong. Like, I don't know.
Well, and see, my only association with these type of games is just typically with somebody who's just sort of either a latent or a really obvious asshole that, like, wants to make himself look better, so make other people look bad. And so it's sort of like my association with these games has always sort of been like whatever toolbox was trying to make himself kind of puffed up would use this as a conduit by which to tear other people down, and that was always been my experience with them. So when they're like, "Oh, they're gonna do the spin the ball thing," I'm like, "Oh, fuck all these people!" Like,
yeah.
I don't, it's like, so I don't really have it like going in, and also too, like this one and Forget Me Not, I will have the weird distinction of like just a bunch of insufferable jackasses.
There were
like just from sea to shining sea. It's just with Truth or Die, they kind of evolve, and Forget Me Not, they just don't. But this one. They do kind of evolve, but initially, you're like, God, I don't like any of these people.
There were a lot of awful people in these movies.
Yeah, some intolerable teenage jackasses.
Yeah.
See, well, and, you know, I would say with the Truth or Dare, Truth or Die, is like, it is a little bit more authentic in a way, but, like, with Forget Me Not, it was like, I kept thinking, I paused at one point, like, the dialogue, and I kept thinking, like, God damn it, like, this is as if, like, somebody was at a party, and they were drunk, and they had some other drunk guy tell them about how Kevin Williamson writes dialogue in Scream movies. And, like, this drunk guy told this other drunk guy, and then the drunk guy remembered it the next day and tried to write a script.
Yeah, based on the drunken shitty screenplay telephone?
Yeah.
Exactly right. Where it's, like, it's three steps and several shots removed from the actual thing. And so it's... but anyway, we're getting off track. I'm getting off track here. But Truth or Die, it sort of, like, has that insufferable jackass quotient kind of covered initially. But at least they do change a bit.
Yeah, so what do we got? The guy Felix, who fancies a girl...
Right.
And so, asshole does apparently the Truth or Dare move that Charlie's familiar with, which is make him humiliate himself in front of the group. I mean, my Truth or Dare experience was always, because, like, we were horn dog theater kids, but we weren't having sex yet because that would make Jesus sad.
Yeah, whereas I was a horn dog theater kid, which meant I got laid a lot.
Yeah. So our Truth or Dare was more like the girls would dare the guys to, like, go outside, take off all your clothes, and run around the entire house.
For Jesus.
Yeah, and then the guys would dare the girls, like, you should kiss me on the mouth, or, like, you should, like, go into the bathroom and take off your bra and then show it to us.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel like I just jumped right over that whole stage.
It felt so much cooler back then.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Huh. So Felix ends up humiliated and then a year punched in the face by the really shitty guy with the Neil Gaiman hair.
Yeah, because doesn't he just have, like, a sick comeback or something? And then the dude is like, I know how to solve this with violence. Like, yeah, man, I don't know. Like, so, bunch of shitheads, and then group of shitheads get invited to super secret birthday party for Felix. Is it a birthday party? That
yeah, yeah.
And they're like, woo! Let's punch that nerdy kid again.
Which
on
is,
his birthday!
They're like, sick mansion that this party's gonna be at. And they're like, actually the party is at the kill shed in the back. And yeah. They're like, okay, you have to walk a mile through the mud to get to the kill shed. It sounds great.
Yeah, and like the Harbinger shows up and is like, did we tell you Evil Dead was filmed here? Like,
and I love that actor too. The guy, I'll look it up. Let's see, hold on. David Stern. I love that actor. He's in a bunch of British TV shows, a bunch of other stuff, and he just plays craggly. Like, he's just, it's on his driver's license. It's just, you know, he's an organ donor, he's left-handed, he's got green eyes, and he's craggly. Like, that's just part of his thing, you know? It's just, it's so great, because you see him pull up in the truck, and you're like, oh, yeah.
He and the guy who plays Argus Filch in Harry Potter are always competing for roles, I'm sure.
Exactly. It's a very small market.
It's like, damn it. It's like being the black guy at the teen party, like, excuse me, there's already a craggly guy here. Well, I'm cragglier. No, you're not.
No.
Meanwhile, Fred Gwynne is like, you kids don't want to go on up there. Like, oh, come on. Get out of here, Fred Gwynne. You get back to Pet Cemetery. So we got, and then Super Dreamy McDreamerson meets them, and he has that Peter Cushing menace for a little bit, which
yes,
I like.
Very well said.
It's not like, I'm going to kick the shit out of you, boy. It's, I think you'll find that if you try to leave, that all the doors and windows have been locked and barred. Like, oh, shit.
Oh, very much so.
It's very much that the quieter he gets, the more threatening he is.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, the more...
Well, he doesn't do the screamy, intense thing. That was one thing I loved about his character. It's not like... For, like, 45 minutes. It's just like... No, but it's like... But you know what I'm talking about, where you get that in the revenge movies or the... Gather everybody back up to seek revenge or seek whatever the setup is.
Right.
You always get that kind of like 75% of the time you just get the guy with the bullhorn, but he's got no bullhorn. It's just his face, and it's just for 45 minutes of noise. And it just wasn't that way. And I really admire that, partly because the actor's good, but then just from a writing standpoint, it took some confidence in what they're getting to, because these guys are sneaky fuckers. These people that wrote this thing. Because the early part of it, especially once the revenge thing starts happening or whatever, or starts coming together, you're thinking, well, wait, let's just back up a second. You kind of got humiliated at a party, but it wasn't that big of a deal. Like,
right.
Just brush it off, man. But then it's like, and you're like, so for a little while, I was kind of thinking, like, about the middle part of this movie, you're thinking, this is kind of much ado about, not to play much about nothing, but it's like, this is a lot of hullabaloo about not a big thing. This is really kind of unmotivated. And it's like, then it becomes real fucking motivated. And that's really cool. And I really admire them for being like, well, you just kind of have to stick with us a little bit here. And then you'll catch up. Definitely with some of the actors, too. Where initially, you're just like, oh, God, dang. Like, the girl who plays Eleanor, the girl who plays Gemma, they're just both, oh, God, they're awful.
Yeah.
And then by the end of it, you're like, that girl who plays the Eleanor character, Jenny Jacque, or whatever her name is, she's fucking great. She's really good. And
she's
you have to stick with her.
She's the final girl?
Yeah, kind of not the blonde final girl, the kind of unexpected brunette, you know, mean sort of one.
Yeah.
And man, but you talk about an arc. I mean, it's sort of like at the early part of it, it's like, God, I was remarking to Kristen during the early part of the movie, like, God, I want her to die first. I really want her to die first. But by the end of it, I was like, this is a really fascinating character arc. And they really kind of was like, you know, good on them for having the stones to stick with it, you know?
How do you feel about all the what the twist?
This is
because
like,
there's kind of two swerves here.
Yeah, I was entirely with it when we're still like, one of these is battery acid and one of these is water, and you should try and see. And it's not like the glee that like Would You Rather had in those choices is not there, and I really liked that. But once you get to the like, who sent the postcard, and then we find out who sent the postcard, and it doesn't fucking matter, and then like. From Felix is dead. Felix is not dead. he's pining for the fjords. Felix hung himself from the yardarm because there was video of him sucking a dick. And by the time we get through all that shit, it's like, no.
Yeah.
Just no. This was so tight and so cool for 2/3 of its running time. And then just endless kind of, did you send the postcard?
I was glad that they eventually justified all the shitty homophobia that the older brother displays.
Yes, that was another thing.
By making that key to the plot, because that was just nails on a chalkboard to me the whole movie. Whenever he'd say something like, okay, though, but I get it, you're like former army dude, so you're stuck in a place where people are overly macho. And, you know, it's like being a professional sports player. Like, it's, you're almost required to be that kind of guy just to survive. And so, like, I was like, okay, I get how that can be informed by his character, but, ugh. Like, at some point, someone has to address that. And, like, the fact that that does become kind of the overarching motivation. But I felt like by the time you see that is the factor in all this, I was too far gone. Like, it was, like, if that could have been the first reveal, as opposed to, like, half the movie being, oh, he'll be here soon. Oh, he's in wherever. Well, he's dead. And you're like, holy shit, he's dead. So brother set this whole thing up. And that's supposed to be like a little mini like swerve, and now they know they're fucked. Yeah. And then it's, okay, cool. Now we get the plot. That's enough. At that point, you just kind of have to play that movie out, I think. And then they try to layer on the whole, well, he's not dead, but brother still wants revenge because he's basically Christopher Reeve. And then... But then
What happens if he's actually? But here's the thing, though. Like, what happens if he's actually? How much does it change it if instead of being kind of, you know, the kind of laid out sort of Patrick kind of thing? Which I kept thinking with the twitching finger. I kept thinking of Patrick. It just like that was the movie I kept thinking of. Like, and it just sort of was like, please let there not be a Patrick wants his hand job sort of reference here. I'm really hoping they don't go for that. but anyway, like it's one of those things where. It's like, how different would it have been had he actually died? Like, he actually wasn't laying there in the little hospital bed thing, like, right. And the brother only finds out about the party goings on, you know, kind of after the fact. Like, how different does that become, you know?
Right, because that's the thing, is it's, if you have, you could still have that same thing where, you know, he lived this life being humiliated and afraid to be who he really was around his brother or whatever. Brother goes nuts thinking he's taking this, you know, altruistic revenge against his brother's tormentors, and then they reveal that it was actually him who was his brother's worst tormentor by showing him the video, and then perhaps leaving him paralyzed to live with his guilt and unable to end his own life. Like, that's more of your, like, ugh, bleak ending to have in a movie like that, as opposed to, like, well, good thing that one finger works so you can pull the pin on a grenade.
Well, and that's
I did like the badassness of the chick giving him the grenade. That's a dope hero walk at the end.
It's like, this will make the pain
it's
go away.
We just need to go. I'm not done. It's like, oh, you're awesome. Like, well,
that was interesting. That was what made her character so fascinating. You know, she had such an interesting thing about like her family's company and the whole like blackmail deal. Was like that was really kind of clever and like that part of it was really really snazzy. I thought that was cool. But I think Josh, that you're right that like it's just so tightly wound and just spins, and then it hits that one little point and it just goes wobble 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 wobble, and it just gets a little funny. But you're right that it's sort of.
You bring in the caretaker, you bring in Felix, who's can only move one finger, but he still has the fucking razor blade taped to his finger that they use to do the postcard from wherever. And then you get all these speeches from Army Guy, who has been awesome so far, about family honor and how there was weakness, and the weakness was his brother, and the weakness was in both of them, and the weakness is this, that... And you get those big speeches, and then you get the really improbable shit in the house.
Yeah.
And, you know, shotgun changing hands and shit. And I could have done without all of that.
Yeah.
Personally.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like even if you only took the existing footage, I bet a different edit could make this into a movie I'd like a little more.
It could be tightened up.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know what I mean? If you just took out a couple of unnecessary twists and a lot of the yelling over the postcard bit when Duder's out of the room... was the yelling about the map and the Blair Witch.
Yeah.
It was like, I get it, but I also know this is going to turn out to be totally irrelevant.
So what was it, Drug Guy sent the postcard?
I don't even remember. That's the thing, is it was that irrelevant. Some guy like, yeah, fuck it, I did it, because who cares?
Yeah, Drug Guy sent the postcard, and who cares? He was just like, I just thought I would wind him up a little bit, just for fun.
Totally not even a thing, yeah. And it's like, God. Yeah,
because
I don't know.
For a long time, Drug Guy is my favorite guy. Mm-hmm. I really like his Stockholm thing. And the whole scene with him and Jonesy was really tight. Yeah. Although whenever I see a character named Jonesy, I flashback to Dreamcatcher, the movie. And no one should ever have to flashback to Dreamcatcher. Have you seen that?
I've not. It's the ass monster one, right?
Yeah, and they typecast Mark Wahlberg as a retarded guy, and it still doesn't quite work.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, no, it's Donnie Wahlberg. Sorry, wrong Wahlberg.
I will say
a magic retarded
movie,
guy who, by the end of it, is also a fucking alien. By the way.
You can't see my concerned look I just gave Josh.
Here's the thing with that one, though, is that there are some scenes that you're right, Josh, that by the end of it, you're like, This is a chicken pot pie of ridiculousness. But earlier on in that movie, there are some shots that are pretty lovely in that movie that are really well done, and they're like, there's some really cool stuff that goes on the earlier part. It's just the later part where it just becomes
cabin
fever on ice with the Liberace music and it just becomes ridiculous.
You have a couple of really pretty interesting strong characters. You know, the older brother is pretty good. You know, like the final Chicky, when she has her kind of dark turn at the end, is pretty dope. And like drug guy is pretty entertaining for a while. And you have some interesting plot points. And I think the initial, you know, decision of the battery acid or water thing, like that's played pretty well. And especially what I really appreciate about this is when, you know, it's like, here's your thing. And he wheels out the two containers and it's like, all right, battery acid or water, pick the one. And then they do it, and he's like, all right, next person. And it's just the same test, which is
what a person would do.
You would not come up with seven contrived ways to torture somebody. You'd be like, okay, it's A or B. And you're just going to keep going around the room playing Russian roulette.
That was the one thing I kept thinking about with Would You Rather, was it like, you know, the kind of maniacal millionaire-billionaire character or whatever else. Like, he's got all these things all worked up, you know, this whole game and all these different tasks and all these different stuff. But I kept thinking about those little cards, and it was just sort of like, what Kinko's did he have those cards? it's like, so you playing a game, or what are these for?
At his level of wealth, he can afford a laser printer.
I would imagine he's got to be home printing those fuckers, because I mean, it's sort of like, it's got to really weird out the guy, I think. Yeah,
but I mean,
no, Vistaprint, they don't care what they'll print.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
And they'll do it for free with just the shipping.
Yeah, so like, just, you know, but I mean, that is a good point. Like, if you think about this, though, like, had they come up with a bunch of weird ass, like, all right, put your hand in this box, it's either a fluffy bunny or a cobra. You'd be like, where the fuck did guy get a cobra? Like, you know, like the fact they didn't do shit like that, I think, actually made it more solid.
There's actually another one that made me think of, or that reminded me when I was watching this, actually. And like I said, overall, I think, Matt, you said it beautifully, which is that with the footage that they have, a few recuts and a few adjustments, and it's actually, you know, really resounding thud on the drum, you know. But one of the ones I was thinking about with this was, I don't know if you guys have seen the Daniel Harris movie Among Friends.
No, that was one that was on the list.
Oh, okay.
Yes,
so no.
And that's one that's, and it's an interesting one because, like, the girl, the lead in that one, the kind of gatherer of doom sort of character, is like, she just is so plasticine and just kind of like grating. But then you find out why she's plasticine and grating, and then you find out what's going on with everybody else. And it's just
And see, that's cool. That retroactively makes the movie better. That's awesome.
Yeah, and that's what's neat about that. Yeah, and it's sort of like, I'll be honest, early on with this movie and early on with Among Friends, I kept thinking, like, all right, how much time we got here? And then it's like, then the movie goes, oh, let me get your attention again. And then you go, oh, well, good job, movie. Way to go. And so it's sort of kind of one of those things where, well, they're not perfect. Either one of the, you know, Truth or Dire or Among Friends are certainly not perfect, but it's like you gotta give them. I definitely feel like there's a lot going on where they took some bold decisions without being kind of pansy ass about what they're gonna do with them, you know. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, if you're capable of liking parts of things, there are things in here that are worth liking.
It is a there is it's a long, very distinct bell curve to my interest in this movie, though, where it's like, oh, it's a teen party. Oh, these people all suck balls, and they're like, oh. Oh,
that
guy
totally sucks balls.
That's interesting. How did he? Wow, he must be double jointed. But then it's like, and twist and twist and twist and shout and both card.
Nice.
I didn't even realize that was
delightful. At least they weren't all
shouting
dead
at
time,
each other.
You know?
And it just goes right back down. So, I think a perfect bell curve would.
Yeah.
Sum up my interest in this movie.
I bet if this movie was 20 minutes shorter and lost at least
one... On either end?
Yeah, but it lost at least one plot point.
Yeah.
And this is something that is a problem I had with both of this and Forget Me Not. was that, like, I really even had trouble telling the characters apart. Because they were just, especially in this one, like, I couldn't tell if there was a main character. Because it was just a bunch of kind of repellent people doing shitty things.
Yeah.
To varying degrees of shittiness. And I was like, I don't even know who at the end of this party I'm left to care about. And, like, what's the one I'm going to be following home to see what happens to move the plot along? I couldn't even tell. And the same kind of thing with Forget Me Not. It's like, eventually it's like, okay, you got a bunch of assholes in a graveyard. I think I'm following this chick mainly. But yeah. Everybody else could have been anyone. Like, whenever a character showed up, I'm like, so that's the one she's dating, or that's just the other guy? I don't know. They're all
the
kinda...
tricky thing is in Forget Me Not that they're... The fact that they're disappearing and not showing up again is significant.
Right.
When you can't keep track of them to begin with.
Right, yeah. So it was...
But we'll get into Forget Me Not in a second.
Oh, God.
If we must.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, the other thing, too, with this one, one last little thing for me, at least on Truth or Die, was I kept thinking of the character Paul, the one that gets kind of shot in the leg and then kind of... Part of his hand blown off and his ear and all the rest of that kind of stuff. I kept thinking about Joe Swanberg's character in You're Next, where he's got the arrow sticking out of his back and he's got the wound on the side of his head. He's got to be just like, he's just bloody and a mess and just, he's just falling apart.
Yeah, the name. The dude with the glasses in the remake of Evil Dead that just gets.
Yeah.
You're just like, holy punching bag, Batman.
Oh, he's the one. Yeah, he's that's Lucio Rapucci is the actor. But yeah, he's the one. Well, he's the fucker that opened the book in the first place.
Yeah, but he just takes so much goddamn damage and ends up popping back up every time you're sure he's already dead.
So the one thing about this movie that is necessary because of its structure, but was kind of funny to me, is the, like, so you've got the, like, 18-year-olds or, you know, 19 or whatever at the Kill Mansion for the party, and here's 25-year-old grizzled army guy who's like, so let's pop up the champagne, let's have a party. And they're like, let's play Truth or Dare. And he's like, yes, let's play Truth or Dare. That sounds delightful.
Yeah.
And I was like, seriously? He's going to start spinning a bottle and seeing if he can kiss a girl?
All of them are too old for that shit.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I only played that once or twice, but I think I was 12.
I mean, we were high school, but it was kind of acknowledged, like, this is a kid's game that we're going to put kind of a sluttier spin on. For fun, because we don't drink alcohol, because that's what the dumb jocks do.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Because to me, that is distinctly like a 6th and 7th grade era game.
It's for people who are still like, ooh, I might have to kiss a girl.
Right.
Or yeah. Dudes who are like, oh, I might have to suck a guy's dick so that his girlfriend can blackmail me.
Must be rough.
It is that is a hell of a twist.
and that was a brilliant setup, too.
Yeah, to be like, fair, like,
it doesn't make any fucking sense.
You
see him in the
doorway or whatever, you're like, Oh, that was cool.
Like that's really clever. That fit together in an interesting way. I think they could have either focused on that story or focused on the story that older brother is faking with. Well, and either one of those would have been a tighter, more compelling movie.
If you take a step back, though, you go, okay, those two bits of the drugged guy's memory and the filming, those make sense together. But it makes zero sense that Felix would go down on the guy because the hot girl told him to, or that the hot girl would tell him to, or that
the
drug guy could get it up. There's so many questions.
That's true. You'd be surprised. Well,
but they are British, so they are a different species. I mean, that helps.
Yeah, that's true.
The upper lip is not the only thing that's stiff.
I don't know what it is with the air up there. I don't know if there's the air up there in Minnesota, but you guys are aces when it comes to funny. Just aces.
I'm a trained professional.
Let's wrap on this one. I don't know if there's a lot left to say. Overall impressions, Charlie, why don't you start and then give a score?
You know, I think I give these guys a lot of credit for taking some bold choices. Some of them are not, you know, they don't end up being good choices, but they're definitely bold choices. I really, really, really like the actress, that Jenny Jacques actress, as well as love seeing David Stern and stuff. He's awesome. So I thought it was really cool in that respect. Matt said it perfectly. Whereas there is an epically great, multiply watchable, recommend to everybody movie in here that could be recut somewhere. But I would say definitely this is something that's worth seeing, just because it sort of was like, there's a lot of reveals and not clever, cutesy, winky kind of reveals, but actually well realized ones that maybe they get a little bit too big for their britches, but. I think it's cool. I would go probably six and a half, somewhere in that ballpark, which is not what I was expecting to do 15 minutes into this movie, where I was cursing at the screen, wanting them all to die.
Yeah, I get that. I still don't think I don't come around as far as Charlie does on really liking it. I think, like I said, there are parts of it to like. Older brother's performance, especially early on and kind of in the middle of the movie, are really good. I love Chicky's just dark revenge moment at the end. It's just, God, there's just, you want to suck the marrow out of that moment. It is so good. Like I said, really enjoyed that they had kind of the creepy would you rather test, but there was just the one, which grounded it a little bit more in reality and didn't make it into torture porn or gore porn. It made it into, this guy's just crazy, like a real person's crazy. Not hilarious, like hysterical horror movie crazy, which means that you apparently spend all your time building weird traps in your basement. Yeah. Like, I like that. But like I said, unlikable characters.
Confusing people at Home Depot.
Right, yeah. Like, super unlikable characters all around. Like, you know, and just a few too many clever bits of business. So, like, I think had I gone in completely cold, not knowing that someone's like, no, this is better than you think, well, then my expectations are a little too high. Like, yeah. So, but I feel like it's for the kind of horror movies that I end up stumbling across streaming on Netflix that I end up watching on, like, a Sunday afternoon with the boy when he's just like, let's watch a movie. Like, what do you want to watch? He's like, something scary. And so I just pick a random Netflix horror movie and we watch it. And generally, they are worse than this. I'll say that. Hmm. That's definitely true. So, like, yeah, this is like a 5 out of 10 jars of battery acid for me.
Yeah, the middle of this is cool. The beginning and end are not so. I'd hit it about a 5 out of 10 stiff British cocks. Yeah,
undeterred by the ravages of alcohol.
And whatever roofie they slipped the drug guy slipped the dude, and yeah, I don't know, man. It is funny watching, like, I started with a couple of snarky notes on this one and then quit taking notes for the middle of it, and then at the end it's snarky notes again.
Yeah, I decided not to take notes when I hated everybody so much in the first 2 minutes. I was like, I'm just gonna end up saying fuck it to this movie and we'll do a lightning round. And then I got more intrigued, but by then I was like, well, I didn't take any other notes. So I ended up just watching it.
Well, I'll start now. Yeah. All right, so speaking of super shitty people, Forget Me Not, or No Me Olvides, involves some of the shittiest teenagers ever committed to film.
Yeah.
I feel like I can safely say.
And shittiest adolescents.
Amazingly bad dialogue. God almighty.
I think I would love for this one to just read down my notes.
Do it.
Go ahead.
So, we can just comment as needed, because it's... Yeah. I feel like if you've got a decent, like, kind of play-by-play synopsis with notes, we can chime in if there's something we feel we need to say, but we don't need to spend a ton of time on this one.
Yeah, I mean, no, everybody else is welcome to talk. We're not on lightning round rules or
anything. No, but shorter is fine.
So let's see. So all of these boys suck balls, mm-hmm. and the girls are idiots. Mm-hmm. You lied to me? Why? Have you seen your body?
Yeah, that was disgusting.
There was a handful of those lines that make you that just kind of made my lip twitch a little bit. I was just like,
oh god, it was just like, and don't get me wrong, like, great way to make us hate your character, like, that's what you're trying to do. But the fact that, like, then later on, this is one of the people we have to, like,
we're supposed to feel bad he's gone.
Well, but are we though? Like, that's the thing. Is like, you know, we've talked about this before. Like, the difference between a Nightmare on Elm Street kid and a Friday the 13th kid is that you're fine with the Friday the 13th kids being assholes because you're going to cheer when they die. You're cheering for the Nightmare on Elm Street kids to win. And so, like, these are all Friday the 13th kids.
Yeah.
But did they know that? Or did they just write shitty characters?
I don't think so.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is that the two leads, and I was trying to call it early. I was like, I said out loud, I said, okay, I think Blondie and the kid from the movie Hoot are going to be our last two. And, yep. It was just sort of like, you kind of saw it coming, because the other ones are just cast in such a way that you're like, just these people are all the underside of a porta potty. Just like, just awful. Just fucking awful.
Little Ethan Embry kid is pretty decent.
Yeah, and I like him. I like that kid in general.
Stuff to say. So, like, I'm kind of over teen parties that look like college parties that nobody actually ever had, even in fucking college.
Yeah, I've gone to parties in a college town. I didn't go to class, but
I've never seen, and it's the same in every one, where there's just like the little groups of people and doing shots and woo and. This one was great because it's a party where apparently people just fill half of a cup with just raw liquor and just drink it the whole night. They're like, let me get you a drink, vodka or rum? Rum. And so he just fucking pours half a cup of rum.
Yeah.
Which she then carries around to drinks. She doesn't go like, could I get a mixer or yeah, anything?
Could I get an ice cube?
Jerk.
Speaking of dialogue, new king in town, bitches. I'll bow down before my lengthy lance.
Yeah.
So then they go to play this game in the graveyard that everybody knows how to play.
They're basically just playing ghosts in the graveyard, aren't they?
What the fuck is the rhyme, though? And like, it was weird.
That's their 1-2 Freddy's coming for you. That rhyme is not
because
that.
It's a little too verbose, I think. Then we're introduced to a ghost girl who cannot act her way out of a wet paper bag. At the beginning,
how she got in there, I'll never know.
Oh. and they're all doing that, and then she starts it, but they all do the Silent Hill shuffle, the kind of the
yeah. Oh my god!
Well, even when she's just her,
but even when she's just the human,
you're supposed to think she's alive. She's like, I'd really like to play. It's my favorite game. She said, making me think of like Jan and Brady Bunch going Marsha, Marsha, Marsha.
Yep.
Oh my god. Let's see, another good line of dialogue. This is so stupid. Stop reading my mind, movie.
Yeah.
Well, the sun is really streaming down on parts of this cemetery at midnight. It's like, these are day-for-day shots. Is this endless breakup scene really advancing the plot? So why does she decide to go swim for the ring? Oh, so the bad guy can drown her.
Right.
Wait, so she was regular girl and then slight makeup girl and now she's twitchy von Japanese girl.
Twitchy von Japanese is my favorite burlesque performer.
She is great. It's amazing. She has epilepsy, but she does amazing performances.
Gosh darn it, she keeps trying.
I would watch her on Hunka Bra for half an hour, and I have. come on, Eli, don't be a pussy. Be a tiger. I'm not a tiger. I'm a pirate.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. So the dude's about to start college in the fall or buying beer. Cashier's emo hair is not to be believed.
This is where she blows the dude, right?
Yeah.
For the hot dog?
Yeah.
As far as he knows, she's blowing him for a hot dog. Like, I joke, huh?
Let's see. Who the hell is TJ? Huh, so the people who are getting killed are being forgotten, which I suppose makes sense given the title. That's interesting.
Yeah, and see, at first I couldn't tell because, like, I was like, wait, was there just like a dude that one of these chicks randomly started banging? And she invited him along, and then I was like, wait, who? Because she just, like, bangs a ton of dudes.
Well, no.
Because I couldn't.
She was the girl at the beginning.
No, I know, but I had zero fucks to give. And I could not decide to care. And I was like, I don't know who these people are. They're all interchangeable and shitty. Hang on, did she just start banging a new guy? And then I was like, no, wait. Yeah, the fucking tramp stamp. Like, she had the Hollywood license plate with TJ in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that makes sense. But it took a minute for that to sink in. Because at first I was like, okay, cool. They're just inviting another rando along. This is awesome.
It's interesting. Like,
yeah,
they had packed all
say.
Their shit up to go to the beach, and the guys are in the SUV, and the dudes on the motorcycle, and then you have this whole like timeline is altered to where they're going on vacation in the mountains, and the guy, you know, didn't come in on his motorcycle because he doesn't exist, so they just get like smaller car, fewer people, and all different shit in the back too.
Mm-hmm.
So, like changing history that way, like. For a minute and a half, that's
it's a neat idea.
Then you start seeing the like Trent Reznor / Crow guys who are duct taped together and vibrating. And it's
did you not think of the Mystery Science Theater thing with the werewolf?
Yeah,
like you see the skull, you see them go to open their mouth and go, oh, like, I did that in my head. I mean, I don't know how many times.
It's the Silent Hill nurses, which are fine when they're in Silent Hill.
Exactly.
Because in the game, that's kind of creepy, and in the movie, you go, still a little creepy, but it's in the game, so I'm going to let it go. Like, but if you just throw that into a completely random thing of like, oh, so you guys didn't quite, you were the very back row in Thriller.
Well, the kids don't vogue, they vibrate.
Right.
So they've got the other, like, shitty late 2000, early 2000 thing.
Ugh.
And Angela, nobody told Angela that if you're going to do voguing ghost, like, there's a reason the Silent Hill nurses don't have faces.
Right.
Because she's doing, like, vogue face. And so it just looks like strike a pose.
Which, now that Madonna's in, like, her 70s, just looks like Madonna.
Yeah, that can be kind of... It's kind of same veiny. Gross. Let's see. This would be a killer episode of Buffy, and I maintain that premise at 50 minutes. Give me Masters of Horror... Like, recast the entire thing.
I mean, there are things done, though, where people disappear and then no one else has any memory of them existing, yeah. You know, and someone's kind of gradually either losing their shit or this is actually happening. That's a premise that's not new to this and can be done well. So, like, there could have been a good movie there. Or at least a better movie.
Oh, one of the weird things, when Eli goes out to get his dick wet at the pool,
mm-hmm.
he does the, like, big war whoop before he jumps into the pool. Like, it's teen college party again.
Right.
Except it's the motel pool at, like, midnight.
It's just the two of them, like, after the pool should be closed.
At the Motel 6. Like, yeah. You should probably keep it down a bit.
He's doing, like, the Ashcon hot tubbing in the late night.
Like, so, spoilers, Angela's in a coma, and she's sending out her murder ghost. We find her in the hospital.
Yeah, how does she have a ghost?
Yeah, because she's in a coma. I think I explained that.
I feel so stupid because you did just say that.
I'm talking about 15 seconds, we're covered.
Say the same thing twice. That whole bit in the hospital is pretty drawn out and excruciating. And then, so Angela wakes up.
They do miss a key opportunity to do something very funny in this thing, because that's another thing with this movie. Not a single goddamn funny thing in the whole intentional funny thing anyway. The whole thing, like, you know, she keeps turning down the hallway on the floor of the hospital that has 17 hallways. She keeps turning these hallways and sees one of the things. She goes and goes the other way and then turns the other way again. It's like, I want her to turn down one of the hallways and, like, some like kind of overweight fellow with, like, a hospital gown and, like, walking along with his little bag of whatever on the little rolly stick. And then it's just sort of, she goes, and he goes, and then he goes, I wanted that to happen at least once.
I'm tired of being startled.
Like, damn it, I wanted that to
happen.
Right,
that is a missed opportunity in this case.
Damn nation, that would have been great.
So was it all a dream? Because the chick, like, she jumps off of the roof of the hospital, which is not a situation that would end with you, like, on life support. It's a situation that would end with you being mopped up.
How far up
off
is she?
The ground. Well, the hospital's got, what, 3-4 floors?
Yeah.
Or five, six floors?
I don't
floors,
know. Like, you wouldn't do, like jello.
Do 20 stories tall?
20, maybe.
Well, could you see that? Maybe this is giving the movie, way too much credit, but is it a possibility that the thing about falling off the roof is, like, her in the coma trying to regain her consciousness, and then the little ghosty, bitchy, twitchy one says, no, and then just off the road, off you go, and down back into your hole? Is that, I mean, do you think there's a possibility that's what it is, or am I just giving this thing way too much credit?
I think you're probably giving it too much credit.
Okay. She could have been in the coma the whole movie, but it wouldn't have made it a better movie. I could have been in a coma this whole movie.
I felt like I was in a coma.
It would have made it a better movie. You know, the one bit that really works here is at the very beginning, when you've got the girl getting ready for school or whatever, prom or whatever, and the girl getting kind of bathed, like sponge bathed in her coma, and they're cutting back
and
forth.
That was great.
The rest of it, the rest of the movie can fuck right off.
Yeah, that was super smart, and I thought played very, very well, which is similar to a thing they do in Oculus that I really liked.
There's a scene, too, in this one where, like, when they go to the nunnery or the
They get thee to the nunnery.
And, like, that whole sequence, it reminded me a little bit of that movie, My Soul to Take, where, like, nothing makes any fucking sense from start to finish. And, like, they walk in there, and it's just, like, people are saying words and walking down hallways and doing things, and, like, none of them makes a damn bit of sense. And you get the big kind of creepy, you know, twitchy girl reveal behind the stained glass, which I kind of half expect her to have, like, a microphone, and there'd be a band behind her, because it was such a great entrance. It would be like, they just, like, hit the big rock riff, you know? Cause it's,
she's
like,
fabulous.
Something, go for it. Because, I mean, it's so
like, moves her head around a little bit, and then just Ziggy played guitar.
Exactly.
Like, wow. It's David Bowie.
That's because it's so goofy. It's like, and dude, football dude, is just standing there watching this whole thing, like, wouldn't you think you're compelled, like, you know, I might stay to watch this, take a couple pictures, or it might be better for me to get the hell out of here.
It's a shame, because I thought the stained glass window blowing out looked pretty decent.
No, it did, actually.
Yeah.
And him, like, the football player guy covered in glass was actually kind of dope. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, here's me and all my twitchy friends. I'm like, yeah, sure. Miley Cyrus was scarier at the VMAs, dude.
Mm.
No. There was not enough twerking in this.
Oh! I did remember there was one part that actually I did say I did pull a Matt, and I said, "Bravo, movie." When the guy, you know, the douchey car, douchey guy, that situation, when he like almost hits the girl, he pulls over, and then he like sees somebody through the bushes, and he goes over there, and that whole bit, and he's on the phone. They set you up in that scene to expect to see something over his shoulder the first time around, and he's still talking on the phone, he's still looking around, and then you look over his shoulder again, and you don't see anything, and then they do it again. And then, like, the fourth time, you're like, okay, fine, nothing's going to happen. And then you see this little dark figure go whoop into his car, and I was like, ah, good job, movie. Yeah. That was cool. Yep. You didn't give it to me the first time around, and that was, so I was definitely hats off for that scene. I was like, good on you, movie.
Yeah, because that's before you know that the bad guys are, like, they're wearing the still suits from Dune.
Kinda.
But then they're wrapped in duct tape.
But it's the Roger Corman budget.
The yes. scene, well, like the scene where all the arms come out and grab the girl after she jumps in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
You get way too good a look at those costumes.
Yeah.
And it is just like duct tape wrapped around and kind
of burlap. I mean, because it's just a slightly more goth rocky version of the costumes that kids are wearing when they try to kill the asthmatic girl for kicks.
Yeah, it's like it's kind of like a somebody saw Edward Scissorhands. A lot. And they're like, dude, we do not have the zipper budget for this shit. Right. What else is silver and cheap? Anyway, so, you know, wrap it on this. For one thing, there are too many characters to begin with.
Yes.
They're all dipshits. The dialogue is really weak. The villain is incredibly funny because she's a horrible actress.
Oh, this is also the one where one of the cops is one of the super slutty chick's dad.
Yeah,
and they're constantly drinking, smoking, and talking about fucking, like, in front of me. She's like, you guys. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Stop it.
Like, because at first I'm like, okay, it must be, like, her older brother, where he's like, whatever, it's not really my problem. But it's like, nope, he's clearly dad. And then, that's fucking weird.
Also, how is he dad? He's, like, 30, and yeah, he's clearly 18.
3 years older than her.
Yeah, like, they're 18, and they live in that special place where you can just buy beer when you're 18.
Well, no, they went in to steal it.
Oh, that's right. You have to blow a guy and steal.
Yeah, because normally there's a guy. They said the regular guy's not there. So I'm assuming there was just a guy that was willing to do it normally.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a different guy, thus the hot dog blowjob. Hot dog blowjob is our new podcast. Coming soon.
We'll be watching three pornographic movies a week.
Only three?
Well, you know, the thing about this...
Well, I mean, professionally.
Right.
Okay, now, one thing that should be said is that the listener who recommended the movie... We don't know what his expectations were going into this. He could have thought this was fried shit on a stick, and it wasn't that bad. And so then his expectations were, you know, overshot a little bit. And so, like, I'm kind of wondering. Actually, I would love to kind of find out, like, where his expectations were going in.
Noah DiBiase, tell us what's up. Were you sitting there going, I'll bet if I push play on this, and a ghost is going to appear and shove a glass rod up my urethra and break it with a hammer? And, you know, I would be overjoyed.
Tuesday.
Yeah. You know, if that didn't happen.
It didn't happen.
Yeah, you and I swing different ways.
Delightful.
You don't swing at all. You got that glass rod up there.
It's kind of more of a pendulum sort of situation.
Yeah, we started recording an hour later than we usually did. Hopefully no one can tell.
No.
So I'm hitting this at like a 3.5 out of 10. I'm not like mad that I watched it because it was interesting in a train wrecky kind of a way, but
yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah, no, I'd go like a 3 out of 10. Yeah. It was, like I said, the idea of like the am I going crazy with people disappearing, you know, I mean, that's a very Invasion of the Body Snatchers type thing. Sure. Like, there's ways to make that work. This one didn't do it, and I hated people world. So hard.
I like that the whole world was changing around them, but mm-hmm. again, that's just a tiny...
Yeah, and plus. So yeah, I just... It was... And there were a couple moments where I was like, that's kind of a neat-looking monster. But then you always saw too much of it, and it did too much of the little shaky-freaky thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely had that kind of rubber... You know, Halloween rubber mask sort of vibe about them when they get the look up. And after a little while, you do kind of get that kind of... They open their mouth and just... Oh! By that point, you're not... It's not the proper effect, you know? I will say to this movie, and I don't know anything about these dudes that did it, the guys that wrote it and the guy directed it. I know nothing about these guys. But the thing about it is that, like, if you take that concept of, like, as Josh, you pointed out about, like, the world changing as this sort of people get forgotten or whatever else, that in and of itself, and that little nugget, is really, 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 really good. Like, that really, that concept of, like, fucking with it or whatever else. And think about, like, in Plus One, where, like, things start getting weird and they, like, have adjustment things and they're remembering stuff and they're seeing things and it's screwing with their ability to make decisions. All that stuff is really, really, really well thought out. So in this one, there is this nugget of goodness that, like, if they weren't so goddamn ambitious and they weren't trying to just rip off Kevin Williamson's Bad Day and things scribbled off and thrown in the trash for dialogue, then, I mean, I think they actually had something there that was cool. And it just, man, oh man, it just got fed into the machine and diced up there. I mean, it was just a mess.
Agreed.
And was this another Bloody Disgusting Presents?
I don't think so.
Either this one or Truth or Die.
One of the two
disgusting.
Was. I don't remember.
No, no,
which.
Yeah, Truth or Die is the Bloody Disgusting. This one is just
okay. Well,
yeah, which is nowhere near as surprising as seeing WWE films on Oculus. What the shit? We'll get to that in a minute.
Well, let me tell you something, brother.
Yeah, we'll take a break before that.
Don't bite the light bulb.
Wow. Snap into a light bulb.
Oh, there's your title right there.
Yeah. Should we take a break before we do Oculus?
I could use that. Take a break. Oh, one little point of order. Mm. Plus One had the wild teenage party that actually justified it in narrative as this is a ridiculously off-the-hook thing because this guy is rich and desperate for friends.
Right.
Yes.
So if you're going to do that, do that. But otherwise, fucking teen parties, man.
Yeah.
We'll take a brief break and be right back.
You wanted those other words to start with a B.
God damn. Mod bam. So finally we have Oculus, or Oculus, I suppose. It's Latin. Right. What am I going to do? Starring Karen Gillan as the woman of my dreams, as she is in just about everything.
Okay.
I had a really disgusting moment during the beginning of Oculus, Charles, when I felt bad about myself as a human being.
Hmm.
Because,
I got you.
In the middle of the night... She's, she gets out of bed, she's wearing the, like, tiny baby doll nightgown and, like, unfolds those legs and then there's the bosom thing going on. And I actually went, in the theater. And then I just felt like an asshole. It's like, she's a lovely person with many great qualities. She is also just alien sex on a stick.
What's crazy is that she is, like, in real life, Karen Gillan is, like, She's fucking tall. And I'm 6'1", so, like, it's not a lot. I mean, it's like, these people are taller than me, but generally they're dudes. I mean, she's really, really tall. I mean, she's, like, she's just, like, this she's a gazelle. And it's, like, and it's kind of, like, and it is alien kind of sort of a deal. It's, like, if you've ever seen its pictures of Natasha Henstridge next to other humans, and she's one of those ones where she's just, like, this angular thing. It's like, oh, look, it's like a building. Like, somebody designed her in architecture school. Like, she's real weird looking. But yeah, you kind of notice that in this. And you know what's interesting with this one is that if you think about other stuff that she's done, she isn't shot in such a way, or maybe it's just, I don't know what it is, but this one, they definitely don't make her seem kind of littler. They make her actually seem like this, like really, like a lot of presence, even to the point with her fiancé where he seems very meek, and that actor certainly isn't, but it's sort of like, he doesn't have very much presence, and usually we have guy-girl scenes like that. You expect the guy to have presence and the girl not to, and it's very much the opposite with that. And the way they shot her on film, this one, is just like they really capitalized on the fact that she is really fucking big,
and she's got the power in this movie of all of the main characters. She's the powerful one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's at the end of it, she's a little bit too sure of herself, I think, and that's what causes everything to go to shit. But she spends an awful lot of time just dominating in those opening scenes. Her attitude is very much like, I know what the fuck is going on, I am pissed, I am well informed, and I'm just going to kick the shit out of this mirror.
Right.
But isn't that, that's her great. Tragic flaw, that's her beautiful tragic flaw, is that like, that her humanity gets so crammed down that when there is that little explosion of humanity right at the end there, I don't know if we want to give away it entirely, but like there is that little like glimmer of humanity that shines through, then man, oh man, she just, you know, she kind of dives into it because she is still a person. And that is ultimately the thing that is her big, downfall is that she's right. I mean, she is a machine, you know, and it's like, and it's maybe that thing that that humanity that kind of gets mushed out that, you know, that comes back to get her in the end, ultimately.
Hmm. Are we still glossing over the fact that Lucas from Empire Records is in this film?
That was amazing.
I mean,
yeah, man, Roy Cochran.
It took me about 30 seconds to go, wait a minute.
For a second there, I thought it was the guy from Office Space. And I was like, no. I must say that undercut some of the horror.
It did for me, too.
Because whenever somebody was like, what is wrong with you?
What's with today?
We just turned to each other. It's not on Rex Manning Day.
Yeah, Rex Manning Day gets darker and darker as the years go by.
As you have like Lucas, Starbuck, and Amy Pond kind of mixing it up in this movie. So the weird thing is, for maybe three quarters of this movie, I don't think I blinked or relaxed a single sphincter in my body. I thought it was like, it's unbelievably tense. They're doing these great cutaways from past to future, future to past.
I think that was brilliantly done. I'll point that out.
The editing in this
really
movie is
unbelievable. Yeah, they really seamlessly interwove. We didn't get an origin and then a modern. We didn't get a modern and then a flashback. We had both stories told in tandem for the duration of the film, which is a nightmare logistically, I'm sure.
Yeah, and having some of it be like, he turns a corner and he does just the house, the mirror kind of convinces him that he's the kid again and going through the whole thing again.
Yeah, and that was something
that was a way to fold that in nicely.
Yeah, we mentioned, I think when we were talking right after the film, was that like I really loved that when you watch those scenes toward the end where they're kind of gearing up to defeat the mirror, whenever they're on the attack, we're seeing their adult versions, whenever the mirror is fucking with them and they're scared and fleeing, we watch the kid versions flee. Mm-hmm. So eventually you actually see the power struggle.
Well, that's kind of the thing. The fear that you see as kids is not... I mean, it is definitely with seeing the kind of visions of Marisol and some of the other stuff, but like, it's also like in the fact that if you're in the house and your mother's chained up in the bedroom and your father is losing his goddamn mind walking around with a gun, I mean, that's very, very scary. And so, like, it's really neat that, like, it does, the fear plays on both a supernatural level and also a practical one, you know, where it's, I mean, it is really legit fear.
Speaking of practical, I'm assuming the staple remover, fingernail removal was
Oh, God, that one.
That was just awful. I hate fingernail trauma. That gets to me so quick. And that was so well done and just disgusting.
I tell you what, man, that when I saw the, when we did the premiere, with the premiere during Southwest Southwest, packed house, the whole thing, that gag, I mean, these are people that I've seen a lot, some of these guys are familiar, I've seen some of the stuff with them or else, I've seen all manner of blood and guts and gore and just all manner of awfulness, and like, you know, you see the thing, and he looks down and he's got the damn staple remover dug into his finger. The entire crowd, collectively, everybody's asshole went frunk. And everybody went, ugh! You know, it's just like, ugh!
I mean, it's bad enough with just the noises and the Band-Aid.
Yeah. Yep.
But then when you're like, oh, just kidding, there is no Band-Aid.
Yeah, fucking gross. So here's where we are already starting to have differing opinions here, because, like I said, you know, you guys both liked it. It seemed like the people that came out with us and that watched it liked it. I was just kind of bored. And so this thing is like we're used to like, oh, there's all this tension, whatever. I like sat there going, okay, the mirror's kind of doing the Shining thing where he's going to kind of go cray. I get that. And I was like, when is something going to be cool? And like, I was never interested. I thought nothing interesting happened. Like, I just, I don't know. I never saw the part that was supposed to make me go, whoa. Like, I just, I don't know. Like, I
don't know if it was a whoa. It was just a like, the continued ways in which they find out the house is fucking with them and kind of realizing that they are way more screwed than they think they are and just wondering what the actual reality is. Hmm. Although, like, so by the end of it, it did kind of fall apart for me because, like, the first time you see that chick with the quicksilver eyes, absolutely terrifying.
Yep.
When you see the dad with the quicksilver eyes, okay. The mom with the quicksilver eyes, By the end of it, there's like an entire three-ring circus and all the members of the Beatles. It's like the cover of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band standing around with the quicksilver eyes, and I think it's just too much.
It lost all impact, yeah.
And so the last like 10 minutes of the movie was like,
I feel like they lost the thread of this really crazy, tight, scary thriller that they were making, and they lost the scares. And, like, the ending is okay. Like, it's a way for that story to end, but otherwise, I felt like I wish it would have scared the shit out of me instead of scaring, like, some farts. You know, it didn't... Metaphoric farts.
I don't know if I necessarily agree, because, like, the thing of, like, once you see the Katie Sackhoff's character, Mom, when you see her in that, like, full-on, feral, freaky-ass situation, again, it's the difference between the supernatural and the practical. It's like, you know, feral mom, crazy, out of her damn mind, strangling, trying to kill the kids. You know, dad's lost his fucking mind, walking around with a gun, all the rest of that kind of stuff. Those are really true-life kind of scary stuff, along with this kind of supernatural thing. I was kind of likening it in my mind to going and visiting like Disneyland or Universal Studios, where like, excuse me, you're seeing into the park from the waiting area where you're waiting to get in, and you can see the park and you're kind of seeing it around there, whatever else. And it's like, oh, this can't be real. This is awesome. Like as a kid, you're like, oh my gosh, and you walk in and then you're just like surrounded by it, and it's like, holy crap. And so I almost think, and maybe this is reading too much into it, but I almost think as though seeing all the different people that are affected by the thing and all the stuff, I don't think it's the movie is trying to get at us in so much as it's getting at her. And like, and the whole thing of like, because she is so brash and she is so confident and she is so just self-assured about all this research that she's done and all these precautions and everything that she's done to try to destroy this damn thing. That, like, I don't think that all those things, and as you mentioned with the eyes and all the people showing up and everybody and the whole thing, I'm just giggling because the way Josh put it, it was very funny, but, like, I don't think that that's geared towards us. I think it's geared towards them. And the things that are geared towards us, like the shot when he's talking to the neighbor and you see the bloody fingers behind the doorway, you know, shots like that. I mean, it's just like, those are the shots that, like, and when they walk in the back of the room and the cameras are facing each other, and then the one that got me, oh my God. God damn, I dug my fingers into the damn handrest twice. I saw the movie once, and I knew what was going to happen, and I did it again, where they, like, move the cameras, they, like, look at the camera for a while, so they look back at the footage, and it shows them moving the cameras and then putting them, you know, face-to-face and then moving stuff around the room or else, and we know they didn't do that. And that just, like, I dug my fingers into the handrest, and I was just like, uh-huh! That really just got me to no end. So it seems like that's the stuff that's geared towards us, whereas the popping up and the kind of frantic craziness of the last 15 minutes of that movie. And, God, I hate saying this out loud because I feel like I'm just going to ruin the tension of it, but, like, the downer ending, I love the downer ending. It made me really, really happy. Like, they didn't sack out and just be like, oh, well, then everybody lived happily ever after somehow, and yay.
Yeah, no, like, I'm always a fan of the nihilistic ending.
It was just like, oh, this is disgusting. Like, it's basically going to be like, he killed his sister, he killed all this of the best that happened, and he's going to be... It's just like, oh, man.
I think it was a pretty straightforward extrapolation, though. Like, the whole history is repeating itself is part of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, and when you see that big old anchor, you're like, that has to go through a person, or I'm going to demand my money back. Then, you know, it's I believe Chekhov wrote about if you have an anchor suspended from the ceiling, it has to drop through Karen Gillan's throat.
The Lion in Winter and the Elevated Anchor, I think is the subtitle, yeah.
Do you guys have a satisfying reason for the fact that she doesn't just want to show up and immediately destroy the mirror? She wants to fuck around and wait till the plants die and have a dog get absorbed by it?
I think she wanted to prove the supernatural, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's proving... Well, I think because part of it is
that's
like,
the chip on her
she's
shoulder.
Probably, well, I think she's spent most of her life having to prove her sanity and prove her legitimacy as a human. And so,
well, it seems like she got away scot-free. Her brother's the one that went to the hospital.
Yeah, but that's her therapy. Like, everybody else is telling her, this is what happened, and your brother is in jail because he killed somebody and he went crazy.
Right.
And she's like, I know he's not crazy, and I'm going to prove it. And then I think when the brother is like, no, you're crazy and I'm well now, I think that pushes her further to like, no.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, if she's the one that has...
No, I bought her motivation entirely.
See, because if she's the only one that actually knows anything about how dangerous and awful all this shit is, and then she's the one that's like, haha, I know exactly how it will destroy all of us.
let us go play into that.
Well, she thought that she thought she could beat it, you know? She hadn't measured out its sphere of influence.
I mean, it
and
ended
everything.
So well for her the first time, though.
Yeah, and but that was before she did all her research, you know? Like, right. So she did this whole armoring up thing and just got the shit kicked out of her.
And the crack in the mirror is what does it. To me, like, her through line from being a child to being an adult in this obsession over all this time is the crack in the mirror. I think that's what keeps her with this obsession, where, like, in the review that I wrote for this, I was like, it seems like every part of her life she has padded with BS, like the BS fiance and her career and everything else. Like, everything kind of is done in just such a way that she can stay fixated on her thing, and it doesn't distract too much from what is going on. I think it's also very, very important to point out, like, both Kay Sackhoff and Rick Cochran are really good as the parents. Those kids, Tim and Kaylee as kids, Annalise Basso and Garrett Ryan, fucking incredibly well done for kid actors.
They're good.
That girl especially, that little girl, she is unbelievable. That girl is amazing.
They gave me that, like, E.T. and Super 8 feeling.
Oh, man. Oh, man, that girl. I mean, the boy did a good job, too, but that little girl was something else. I was just like... You know, because, I mean, you know full well that if she's lousy or even flat, that, like, all that cutting back and forth that's done so, edited so beautifully, is just, like, it's totally wasted. Because you're like, oh, here we go again.
Right.
Here's Showtime actress, you know, and it's just like, oh, God. But, I mean, she's just, real quick, that girl.
I got a question from Mudd, who went and saw the movie with us. He said he and his wife were talking about the movie on the car ride home.
Mm-hmm.
And they both realized that they didn't know if the movie did or did not actually say why or how the mirror was haunted, or if they just showed that there were other people that it affected through history. Did they? And, like, I'm not saying they had
Kaylee
to make
says
it good.
That, Kaylee says nobody knows.
Because that's the thing.
From.
I said I don't think they addressed it. I think they just showed that, like, it had gotten other people.
Yeah, this is the first guy that we know.
Yeah,
got it, and so it's named after him.
And what's fascinating about that too is that, yeah, and I think you're exactly right. They don't 100% lay it out, and when she goes through the whole litany of stuff, she says this is the earliest known, you know, notation of it or whatever. And she's going through each one of those stories, which, by the way, in and of themselves, each one of those stories is pretty goddamn freaky just by themselves. It's like,
yeah.
A couple of those ones, it's just like, ugh. But anyway, like...
Dehydrated in the bathtub got me, I don't know why.
Yeah, it's just a really... But, like, you know, one of the
that
things
that... must have got you. You spend a lot of time in the shower.
I spend a lot of time in the shower and the bath, yeah. I'll be doing that actually the next half hour. But... Yeah, I don't know. It was, man, I had a bunch of people ask me after they said, oh, yeah, you guys went and saw Oculus. What'd you think? And I was like, everybody but me really liked it, or at least liked it. And I just literally walked away kind of going, it's like eating a ham sandwich with no condiments.
Yeah.
Like, it was clearly competently put together and beats the shit out of most, like, horror that makes it to theaters lately, like in a wide release.
Yeah, compared to The Purge.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
this is obviously, like, it's pretty well crafted. It's just, in no way did it get me emotionally. And I don't know what it is about it that lost me. But we talked about not caring about the kids in the other two movies, and it's like, I, in a way, just didn't care about these people either. It was just like, okay, I'm just kind of watching these things happen to these people, but I'm not invested.
The funny thing is, I didn't really give a shit about the brother. But Kaylee, I was totally invested in what happened to her. Maybe it's because, you know...
You want to feel like you have a chance.
Well, because Karen Gillan is just so fucking luminous, you know? You can't look away.
But I can't point to any part of it that was badly done.
Yeah.
All the pieces seem fine, they just don't hang together to make a picture that I like.
And I would have said that that you're suffering the same thing that I am, where the ending was kind of lackluster, but... You were feeling that all the way through.
Yeah, that's the thing. I never once really got into
it.
There's some badass little moments in there.
Part of, like, the most was, like, the mom getting all feral and getting chained up. That, I was like, oh, that's fucked up.
Well, I think, like...
That was interesting. That's, like, the one I was sat for. I was like, okay, maybe this is going to really hit, like, this. The pace is going to pick up. And I was just like, no, this is the one scene.
What about finding the broken plate and picking up
Oh, my God!
And getting the boyfriend with it. And, like, the plate wasn't real, so none of this is real. And then he finds the rest of the pot that she had kicked over. God, that was an amazing shot.
Yeah, and oh, speaking of...
All that stuff with the house fucking with him. Like, the apple into the light bulb. For a second, I was kind of pissed that they took that back.
Mm.
That it was an apple after all. But then again, just that that kind of malevolent trickster glee.
And I feel like they totally wasted just that gag by telegraphing the fuck out of it.
Oh, I didn't think
but,
so.
See, I was like...
Oh, Mud thought so, too, but I didn't
Yeah, because I was like, oh, they're going to do the whole she reaches for the apple but picks up the light bulb. Oh, nope, they didn't do it. Okay, this time for sure. Oh, wow, weird. I'm surprised they didn't do it. There it is. Well, like, I thought it would have happened two tries before it did, and so I had... No suspense. Like, it would come out of the blue.
The way that it happens with the sound effect and then pulling the
Again,
giant chunk of glass
very well
out
done.
Of mouth,
like,
amazing.
That's all well done, but they'd released all the tension before it happened.
Oh, I didn't think so.
So, yeah, I just, I don't know. Like, it's really weird. I don't, I'll watch it again once it's on Netflix or something and
By
see
the way,
if
Charlie,
it improves my opinion.
Yeah, when you saw it in the theater, did people laugh when it was revealed that it was the apple the whole time?
I think there was a couple
Because
of
they
laugh.
Cracked up.
There was a couple of laugh moments where, like, there was... I think that may have been one of them. There was another one where, like... there's another one where, like, he... Oh, goddamn. I'm trying to remember where, like... There's a couple of ones where it's... You know, back when the kid, with the kids' age ones, where, like, there's a couple of lines that are delivered in just such a way that just seem kind of silly. And that's kind of the thing. I mean, it sort of is like, you know, a lot of times... Especially for somebody like me, who I just... You know, and I don't want to get into a big thing with you two being wrong about it, but I love Mike Flanagan. I think he does amazing work, and it's one of those things where this is one of those movies that I've been waiting for a long time. And I got to be honest that, like, when I saw it the first time, I think I probably missed some stuff. And then going back and watching it again, I was like, okay, now I've kind of filled in some of the gaps or whatever else. But it's one of these things where, and I have to be 100% honest, as much as I really, really love this movie, and I wish more things that came into... the theaters and the horror category were crafted this well, because a lot of them just are crafted just to get them onto the screen, and just they don't care about lighting, they don't care about shots, like the shot where she's doing the lanterns down the hallway, and instead of doing the bullshit three-quarter shot from up top, they do across the floorway, so you get lighting on the floor, you get lighting going upward, and you get the lighting across her leg as she's walking away, and you're looking at the darkness beyond that, and it's a beautifully composed shot. The score is goddamn amazing. These guys that put the score together, they work together with the and the process of making the movie. So, I mean, a lot of the score is really, really genetically connected with the film. But I will say that, like, as much as I loved it and as much as I love the craft of it and somebody that cares this much to do something that takes this much, you know, depth and time, I will say that, like, Matt, maybe there was parts that in the middle part of it or maybe earlier on that you kind of wanted to get smacked in the face more, and maybe that didn't happen. Because, like, to me, the ending is, like, I just, you know, you don't want to be a gimmicky, but you get an ending like that where you're like, this kid is fucked, his family is dead, and this goddamn thing gets to move on along where else. That's pretty ballsy, you know, but
if yeah, it like I said, it I'm a fan of the nihilistic really ending. Yeah.
But if it doesn't get you early on, though, that you don't, it doesn't have you by the, like, you, Matt, in the theater, it doesn't have you by the nostrils. As you know, right. Two fingers in the nostrils versus, you know, if the person next to you is more emotionally invested, that ending just goes, bam, you know, and so I can see what you mean. Like, if you weren't there earlier on, Josh, you mentioned, like, if you're not there earlier on, then certainly it's not going to register in that same way.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say about this movie, I did enjoy the fact that we watched it in a theater, and it was a lightly attended screening, but hearing, especially the folks that weren't part of our group, who I think see fewer horror movies, although Amanda and Leo, I think, don't necessarily see a lot of horror movies, because those two who are sitting to my right were losing their shit a few times during the movie, and one of them would be like, oh Jesus fuck, and the other would go, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, and they, like, I could see them clutch each other,
yeah,
and like, that's amazing. Like, I love that I got more enjoyment out of hearing them or the people behind us freaking out at stuff that I thought was pretty pedestrian, but it was like watching other people get scared by this movie was a really fun, nostalgic feeling. So, like, I enjoyed the process of being in a theater listening to people react in the way that this movie intended to make people react. That was really fun. It's like, I liked that about it, and clearly it worked for a lot of people. Like, when we walked out, like, it was like, oh my god, that was so fucked up. And I was like, maybe I've just seen one too many horror movies. But
well, I don't think so, because you can still get tripped out.
I still
out
get freaked out every now and then, but yeah. Like,
I like to be... That's what I mean, though, when the audience laughed after she looks up and she's holding the apple and her mouth isn't bloody anymore, that was such a great moment of catharsis for the entire audience, because the bloody mouth is so gnarly, and then just... I don't know if her mouth actually does open that wide, or if...
Because that's a huge chunk of glass. She
pulls the huge piece of glass out of her mouth and just kind of looks at it, and everything... It's just awful for a couple of seconds.
And that sound is what does it. That
everything
sound
is just
like, ooh.
Yeah, it's just so tense and crushing, and then to have it go... Oh, but they are so fucked.
Well, you know, and that's kind of the thing is, like, you know, and I don't... we get in this whole other thing talking about this, and I don't want to open that can of worms necessarily, but, like, one of the things that with this movie that I really think they do a great job is, and as great as the score is, there are some moments where they allow some quiet to happen. And I was thinking that, like, when you talk about the light bulb sequence where, like, that sound is just, oh, just so fucked beyond belief. That sound is just a chunk, and it's just, oh, man. And I was thinking about one of the movies that I've seen over the last 20 years that, like, it's not a good movie by really anybody's measure. Some people like it, but not really a great measure. Is the remake of House of Wax.
Oh, we
love that, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, some people love it. Some people think it's just fucking god-awful. So here's the thing with that. Here's the thing with that movie. That movie has stuck on my damn ribs since the day I saw it for some reasons. But the primary reason is when the girl, blondie girl, not the primary blondie, but the other blondie, is down in the sewer area, and she sticks her hands up through the grates, and then lops off her finger with the little snips. That sound.
Yep.
That sound has been lodged in my fucking head for the last 15 years. And if I think about it, I can still goddamn hear it. And so, you know, in the movie like Oculus, where like it is very moody and it is very kind of dark and downbeat, and it isn't showy necessarily, even though it is quite violent and ucky at parts. It isn't big and brash. That sound, that light bulb sound, it's little things like that that like. That they kind of tickle the back of your arm, you know. It just sort of, there's something about stuff like that that just it's a mark of somebody that cares about what they're doing, and it's one of those things mm-hmm. that just sort of like, Matt, I mean, I do not begrudge you, you're not registering for you at all, because I think that you still got some enjoyment out of it, certainly. I want to see 20 movies. Well, I'd love to see tons more, Matt, but I would love to see 20 movies a year make it to theaters. That has this much craft.
Agreed.
You know?
Yeah, this one might just not be my flavor, but this is the kind of quality of horror I'd like to see.
To have it not be... Like, when we saw The Purge, for a couple of weeks, we were like, how the fuck did I sit in a theater and watch this and can't even get American Mary or Maniac?
Yep.
You know, we were just pissed about it for weeks. But, you know, I think... Thinking about the big awesome moments in this movie, I think the problem is that it loses that bar by the end of it.
I don't
agree.
Like
I said, the more people the more those Quicksilver dudes you get, and the less of like the house fucking with them in ways that are painful and fatal, and more the mirror fucking with them in more of a story driven way. Is where it kind of started.
Yeah,
to
seeing
lose
the
me.
Monster visually was largely unnecessary.
Although I will say, and you had the opposite take, but when she is surrounded by the Quicksilver Eyes people and the mouths all go way open and they start making the alarm clock noise, that freaked the fuck out of me. It was like Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark illustrations just come to life.
And that to me,
for a second,
just,
that looked crazy.
Yeah, that was to me the dumbest thing ever. I was like, you've really put the nail in the coffin of me ever finding these creatures scary again.
Oh, well, the scene, one of the ones that got me towards the latter end of it was when Rory Cochran's sitting at the desk just gazing at the mirror. And the office is dark. And it's, you want to talk about, there's a lot of scenes in this movie that are lit perfectly, but that's one of those ones that's like, it's just so great the way it's the shot.
Yeah.
But like, he's sitting there and he has that like monotone, creepy, all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy kind of vibe about him.
And yeah, like, totally. And there's like, a lot of The Shining in this.
Well, that's kind of the thing.
It's The Shining in suburbia.
Well, you know, and that's kind of the thing, and I touched on that in the review too, and like, we haven't really touched on it here, but it's one of the things that, you know, like, there is the thing, and it's that shot of the bloody fingers behind the doorway where, like, you know, there is a great deal of ugliness that's happening to these people that is no fault of their own. And it's one of those things where the neighbor, the people down the street, the guy delivering the paper, whatever, they're not going to see that. They have no idea. And that's, to me, that's on a kind of more, like, umbrella level. That's one of the reasons why I really care for this movie a great deal is that, like, it does get the supernatural stuff. And I would agree that it does maybe go a little bit overboard at times, but it is that kind of, like, really shitty thing that happens to these people and really puts them through hell right beyond that picket fence, right beyond that perfectly manicured lawn, and the symbolism of that stuff I thought was goddamn brilliant. And that's one of the things that I would like people to okay, you know, you're talking about the audience reaction kind of thing. It seems to me that in these ones that are these high craft ones, like this one and like The Conjuring would be another one I can think of off the top of my head, but like where you get people in a theater, like when I saw The Conjuring, we saw this advance and they had some press people and some just people like that won contests and whatever. So they had kind of a wide mix of people. There's that one beautiful shot in The Conjuring where you go from light and pleasantness to like the night where then you've got the creature up on top of the bureau. And instead of doing the big flashy face shot, it's that long track shot up to her. And like right before they do the reveal turn and she's looking into the bed or whatever else, there's these three women that were down in my kitty corner to the right. And the one woman is like, as she's looking into the bed, looking back up and trying to figure out what's going on. And it's lit beautifully and everything else is going, it's just crafted beautifully. I'm listening to this woman in the corner of my ear going, oh, no. And it was like, God, this is why I love this stuff so much. And it was like, It was like it reached through the screen and did that to somebody. And it sort of was like, and that's why we're like, you know, craft like this, you know, and Matt, like I said, I mean, you're well within your right to have it not register. I mean, it's like you said, it's not maybe your flavor, but man, I'm glad this exists in the world. You know, I want people to do this more. You know?
Final rating numbers?
I give it a 7.5 out of 10. It's amazingly well done, but by the, like I said, the last 10 or 15 minutes, it felt like they had so much to work with and went really kind of dull with it. So, but I still think it is worth seeing for all the boys and girls.
Yeah, I like this, my ranking is going to be weird on this because like obviously this wasn't.
I'm going to rate it 72 socks. What?
Right. Yeah. There you go. It's I give this one purple out of 7. But but because it's like I said, like this as a movie, this didn't work for me. But that's kind of like, I mean, because I always say that horror and comedy are very, very closely intertwined in how they work on people. And this is like seeing a comedian that didn't make me laugh, but I can tell is a master craftsman. And so, like, I'm going to give this, like, a 6.5 out of 10. Because everything about this seems good, but I can't really give it a high ranking because I don't, it didn't work.
Yeah.
And so it's a weird thing where it's like, on a technical level, I could go, this could easily be like an 8.5. But if I just went, how much did I enjoy this? It's like a 4. But that doesn't seem fair either way, so I'm going to have to like average it out to be like a 6.5,
Well, we've talked about this before, Matt, where like, you know, how sometimes the real life, like you were saying before, you and I don't know if we were recording it, but we were talking about how, you know, like how for some people it's the creature, it's the alien, it's the goop, it's the whatever the hell. And for some people it's the kind of the infection, the kind of microbial stuff, and for other people it's the guy with the napkin. He's very helpful if he gets down on his shirt. No, it's the, you know, the kind of the murderer, killer, serial killer stuff, and like how it registers different for different people. And I'm kind of wondering maybe like for your sensibilities, if you needed a, like not the creature that you were shown, but you needed a different creature.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, I feel like it looked okay. I don't know, like, I can't put my finger on it. If I figure out what it is about this movie that didn't work for me, I'll definitely let you guys know. I feel like definitely less of the creature I saw, but I like the creature I saw. There's just something about it that, I don't know. It's the most unsatisfying review ever to go, everything was beautiful, but I didn't really like it much. Why? I don't know. Like, so I apologize for that.
Yeah, well, I've sat here and gone, like, I feel like I should like this, and I don't, and the Hoyle is a nice lady.
There's always movies like that, though, you know? There's always stuff like that, you know? Yeah. It's like,
it was a damn sight better than Absentia.
Fuck you.
Just saying.
You and your bald head. You don't know shit.
I was kind of expecting Matt to interrupt me. Cause
no, it's not my movie.
I was actually going to go back and
listen. Did I tell
you
the story about how I thought that this movie could have been way better?
Well, the thing about that movie is I was going to go back and listen to our review of Absentia because I don't remember a whole lot about it. But
of which one?
Absentia.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I tried to parse that as three different words.
The troll under the bridge.
Yep.
And the women at the beginning, throughout, their dialogue drove me up the fucking wall to the point where I could barely listen because they interrupted each other like Robert Altman on Ritalin.
But can you say with a straight face that the dialogue in Forget Me Not was worse, was better than in that? I mean, really?
No, I didn't say Absentia was horrible. I said, like, that it... And it wasn't that it was poorly crafted, but it was. It was that it was poorly delivered, that they just kept on talking over each other to the point where, like, when a detective is there and the girl is leaving, she goes, "It was nice to meet." And she doesn't say the "you" because she was expecting to be interrupted. Because that's what happens when you try to talk.
Yeah, no, I remember that being a thing that we were all like,
No, there was some good shit in Absentia. It didn't have Karen Gillan in her luminousness.
Yeah, but it did have
cheesy cop with his cheesy eyes.
Point of order. I can't talk anymore at this point. It did have Katie Parker, who was 12 shades, 3 sheets, 5 slices, and a stack. Lovely.
Wow.
Look, Josh was a goddamn, out of a bathtub full of bicycles. Josh was a goddamn English major, man. I just pretended I know how to write and read and talk. Josh is the one who knows how words work.
Charlie never learned to read. That's his. That is his glory, and that is his tragedy.
That's the bitch of it. I write reviews that I get to the end of it, like, I can't read it. I don't know.
So what did you think of the movie? I have no idea.
I have no idea anymore. I can't read.
Sigh.
Read it to
me. Yeah,
I'm
looking at a picture of Katie Parker, and you got to give me Karen Gillan any day. All right, anyway. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with our movies for next... See, he's interrupting me. That's why he liked Absentia. For next week. Man, I'm starting to feel like the creatures in Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
That reminds me. I forgot to tell you guys. I went and tracked down a copy of the original TV movie that they did of Don't Be Afraid of the Dark. I went back to watch that this last week, and it's quite funny. Like, they're almost, you know how, like, you remember the Helping Hands in Labyrinth? We're the Helping Hands.
Yeah.
You guys, a lot of their scheming, at times it's creepy, and then once they kind of start chitter-chattering more off-screen, like in the dark, but you still hear them, I just cannot stop thinking of, like, a cross between Fraggles and Helping Hands, and, like, off-screen, they're just like, "Oh, we're gonna get her, oh, I'll wait till Saturday, we'll get her, oh, we're gonna do," and it's like, it's really fucking goofy.
Yeah, I'm Hoggle.
It was just like, but I would imagine at the time, it was unnervingly freaky, because it was like these little creatures within the house and whatever, but, like, watching it now, it's just like, this is silly. So, nice. Anyway, I just wanted to mention that to you.
So,
it's good, I was interested how that.
Oh, it's got another craggly actor. I can't get my hands on it. But it's got another one of those craggly faces it's in every damn movie in the last 50 years that needs a craggly actor. And I can't think of the guy. I think he played the dad. No, the uncle, or I don't know. He played the stuffed bear on the Happy Days, I think, or one of those. I don't know. But
I have no idea.
I have no earth idea. Anyway,
you're getting really. Tom Bosley's in it?
No. It's the old fellow. The guy is
Brian Connolly? Pat Morita? Homer Simpson?
Moses? Nebuchadnezzar? I don't know.
Abe Vigoda?
I'm just going to say some names. I think that every time there is a craggly actor reaches max craggliness, Jared Leto gets prettier.
So every other actor is his portrait of Dorian Gray?
Yeah, exactly. Him and Rob Lowe.
You're right.
They're just hogging all the pretty. Yeah. Rails, awesome.
Yes.
So for next week, our short film is The Cat with Hands.
Because we remembered a short film this week.
Yeah. It's one that I saw many years ago and kind of creeped the crap out of me. It's a stop motion thing, about 3.5 minutes long.
Cool.
And just has that kind of dreamy Company of Wolves kind of thing. You'll probably hate it.
But I like Company of Wolves.
That'll be all right. Do you mean like you literally?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm thinking Brotherhood of the Wolf. Never mind.
Yeah.
Never mind. Yep, totally different.
So, like, if you're really tight with the wolves, if it's like a brotherhood,
you're down.
Yeah, but in, like, a company of wolves, nah. Yeah,
if you're down with lupine tree, yeah, you know me.
You're not helping.
No.
So for next week, we're also going to take a trip back in time. Going to watch some older stuff. First off, Spider Baby, and then Black Sunday, and the original Bride of Frankenstein. Or Frankenstein?
Frankenstein.
I feel. Frankenstein. And I will probably watch Young Frankenstein again, too, because any excuse for that is good.
Truth. Yeah, we know Black Sunday is streaming on Netflix. The other two are not, but they're out there.
Yeah, Spider Baby is on Amazon. Bride of Frankenstein is at your local video store.
Yep, or if you bought that sweet 50-pack of horror movies off Amazon, like me, you got a DVD of it.
Go to Matt's purchased list on Amazon. And
then go, I want that one too.
Yeah, and go, how much lube does a single guy need?
You'd be surprised.
Okay, so I have to tell you, and I'll tell you on mic because
sweet
we're on
sec,
mic,
bro.
That... you have ruined my brain.
Oh,
because I'd subscribed to the FreeCycle mailing list where just people post shit that they're giving away and you go pick it up. It's like Craigslist, only there's no money involved.
Okay.
And a lady posted a carton of artificial tears. And I went, oh, the best
blood.
Lube.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Bastard. That says tears make the best lube. No, actually, it's blood because after a while it starts to coagulate, so you slow down.
You know
for her.
Oh, my God.
And thus we learned that the true horror was within.
Now, that's a scary movie. Self-introspection.
If it wasn't for you meddling kids. No, wait a minute.
All right, this has been Horror Show Hot Dog. You can check us out on horrorshowhotdog.com, facebook.com/horrordog, reddit.com/r/HSHD, or at HSHD Podcast on Twitter. I'm Josh, and I'm just going to say goodbye. You just
do I have? Okay. Yeah. Bye. I thought that was pretty good. I like that.
Oh.
Snappy.
Bye-bye.